So, Brad, I just got back from Juneau, Alaska this past weekend, and right outside the city is Mendenhall Glacier. It's about, I don't know, 5 minutes outside the city, and it's, as you would expect, huge. It's a glacier. Anyway, at one point in the weekend, I was Lucy Bellwood was kindly hiking me around because she knew the land a little bit better, and then Nikki Malky had joined us as well, David Malky's wife. At one point, Nikki and I wandered off towards the glacier melt, you know, the little river that flows down from the glacier, because we're destroying our planet. Anyway, there's glacial runoff, and it looks pure and clear and wonderful. And I was like, oh, man, what would it be like to drink water that's been frozen for 500,000 years? This is amazing. Yeah. I'm gonna scoop down and get a little water and just try some delicious, pure, fresh glacial water.
Yeah, how can you not? It's sitting right there. Yeah.
It's right there. So I kind of crouched down because it's a very muddy riverbank, and I crouched down and get a little scoop of water. And I drink it. I swear to God, I stand up and I turn, and I see two Canadian geese right upstream. One of them actively taking a shit right as I turn.
Just pooping away.
Just happily pooping. Not and to make it comedically worse, it would have been great if he was just looking me right in the eye.
Yeah, just looking you dead in the eye and saying that sea turtle is my friend.
So he just looks at me and goes, "New to Juneau, huh?"
Welcome to Juneau.
Welcome to Juneau. Welcome to Juneau. Allow me to give you the old Juneau welcome as a Canadian goose. So anyway, I have to tell you, Brad, glacial melt runoff tastes a little tangier than I thought it would.
You got goosed, but good. Oh man,
somebody goosed my gander.
But anyway. Still, I mean, a goose poop aside, it is cool that you drank water that had previously been frozen for millions of years. That a little bit of E. coli can't take away from that.
I say yes to salmonella, Brad. That's what I say. I say hello to hantavirus. That's what I like to say.
Holy moly, that's hysterical.
Yeah, nothing wakes you up in the morning like a little goose juice in your caboose there.
Well, thank God it wasn't a moose.
Oh, then it would be truly abstruse. So anyway. So actually, as an interesting fun fact, I spent the first 2 days going, is that a moose? Is that a moose? Oh, is that a moose? Is that a moose? And then finally, one of the Alaskans pulled me aside and he said, "Listen, Juneau is completely surrounded by glaciers. Moose can't get here, so stop looking."
Listen, dummy, it's a squirrel, all right? Would you settle down?
It was kind of like them putting a hand on my shoulder and going, "Look, city boy, that's called a tree. I know you don't know what that is, but..."
That's a Dodge Charger. Now sit down and shut up. Is that a moose?
That's not a Mustang. That's a Mustang, you dummy. Anyway.
Well done.
All right.
Oh, God.
Well, on that note, we've got a big show to talk about this week. I'm super excited for this show. So I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And moosing a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his Moose, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Moose.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible. I tried to fit Moose in there. Is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
I was hoping you were going to say let's talk Moose, but that's all right. We'll leave it on the table. So, Brad, I have had a fantastic weekend, and I purposely, you and I talked on the phone yesterday when I got back, and I purposely did not tell you any of the stuff that I did this past weekend because I wanted it to be fresh for the show. What a professional I am, Brad. I held it in. You're getting good.
You're getting good at this podcasting thing.
I think I literally said we're going to save it for the podcast. And so I want to tell you all about Comics Camp, which is for, I bet 90% of the folks that are listening have not heard of it. It is put on by Pat Race and his company Alaska Robotics in Juneau. And in this year, it invited 78 cartoonists from all over the U.S. and Canada. And I think there might have been one from Europe. No, just Alaska and Canada. But 78 cartoonists. of all levels of professionalism and all levels of income and all walks of life and all wonderful people. He cultivates a really kind group. And we go outside of Juneau, about half an hour outside of Juneau, which, at least to this city boy, you might as well be in the middle of nowhere. I love that you fly into Alaska and you're like, wow, Alaska. And that whole dang state, that giant state, is 700,000 people. That whole state.
The entire thing.
And so Glow was like, so what is the average person like in Alaska? And my definition of the average person in Alaska was a beard and mud on their shirt sleeves that wasn't there from today.
Just had accumulated. You could tell that it was
just
accumulated.
Just a accumulation
mud.
Of elbow and knee mud that like wasn't from today. It was from a couple days ago, and that's okay. That's the way, you know, because Alaska's an outdoor state, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually, I want to say it's more than fine. It was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful vistas in and around Alaska. Alaska is a gorgeous state. It is pristine. It's still so pure. I'm sure if I crossed lines with the oil pipeline, I'd be saying something different, but it is so pristine and pure and clean and beautiful. And anyway, Pat does a wonderful job of cultivating a great group. And you got 78 cartoonists to come from all over. And there's a camp outside of Juneau with about five mini little lodges. You know what I mean? It's essentially the equivalent of like a wooden tent. And then there is one main lodge where all 78 of us would congregate and teach each other classes and have meals and invent games and sketch one another. And it was amazing. The whole weekend was amazing. I'm coming out of it energized, inspired. My heart is full. I'm raring to be creative. I have a ton of new friends. I cemented a bunch of old friendships. And honest to God, Brad, I don't overdo it when I say it was one of the best weekends of my adult life.
Wow. Wow. Now, hold on. Five cabins. So those cabins with 78 people, unless people were also sleeping in the main cabin, because otherwise you had a lot of people in those cabins.
Well, my math might be wrong. Maybe there were six or seven cabins. But anyway, but they were big cabins. But I'm just saying in terms of like, it's not like it was a hotel room cabin. It was, you know, you had a sleeping bag on a 1-inch cushion on plywood floors kind of a thing, you know?
Like summer camp kind of thing.
Exactly. Like think of every summer, sixth grade camp you ever went to, or if you were in student body council when you went on a retreat with your student body council in high school, you know, that kind of thing. It's every camp. It's exactly what that camp is. It was originally owned by the city of Juneau, and now the camp is owned by Methodist Church. And they rented out to Pat and to the cartoonists for this weekend. And so we were up there for 4 days. And
back feeling absolutely revitalized. Is that what I'm hearing?
So energized, Brad. So my entire adult life, like I grew up, I don't know about you. I know enough about you to say that this is probably true for you as well. I grew up with no artists in my life. And I knew I wanted to be a cartoonist my whole life. And I wanted to find that sense of group and belonging and people to teach me and to guide me and to just talk shop and to be a cartoonist together. You know what I mean? Like, we'll be alone together kind of a thought. I never found that. And I always hoped that the National Cartoonist Society could be that for me. And it never really was. But this camp was that sense of group and community and teaching one another and learning from one another and laughing a lot and cultivating a sense of play for adults. And the whole weekend was fantastic. It was really, really, really great. And I really wish you would have been there. It would have been so lovely to have you there.
I was telling Carolyn, when I decided to discontinue exhibiting at Comic-Con International in San Diego that first year, and you and I had exhibited together there for years and years, and maybe 10 years at that point.
Right.
When I first decided, okay, this year I'm not going to go, I was worried about having, you ever hear of FOMO? Fear of missing out?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I was worried about having that first year. And the amount of FOMO that I felt this past weekend, eclipsed that San Diego weekend by a factor of about 103. I was, and what made it tougher was that you folks were all off the grid all that time.
Yeah.
So I was continually like stalking you. I was looking to see if you had posted anything on Twitter. I was looking at the Comics Camp hashtag on Instagram and Twitter, just looking for something. And the last thing that had been posted had been something about a woman that had been hanging out at the bar and she ran into a group of church ladies. And I reread that tweet, honest to goodness, about a dozen times while I was waiting for some news from Juno. I'm telling you, this is the first time I really feel like I really made the wrong decision. I think I should have gone. I'm feeling horrible about this.
Well, no, listen, don't beat yourself up. You made the best decision that you could have with the information you had at the time. The fact is, Neither of us had been to this before. And I don't think, aside from Dylan and Katie, Dylan McConus and Katie Lane, who have been lovingly needling me for 2 years now to come to this. and Lucy Bellwood actually needling me, and Dave Malky and Ryan North needling me to come to this. I had no personal experience of it. I had no photos. I had no sense of reference of what this was or why it existed or what was I going to get out of it or was this a worthwhile expense? You know, for me, there's always a hugely mercenary part of my decision making where It's like, if I'm going to spend $1,000, I better get $1,500 or $2,000 of value out of whatever this thing is going to be, you know?
Yes.
And so
yes.
I was looking at this going like, I don't know. Do I want to go spend $1,000 to get muddy? What do I want that for? What's going on? And I finally reached a point in my life where I was like, A, I deserve to take a little vacation and take a break. Like I haven't taken a vacation in about 10 years, Brad.
And so this
was the first step of that. And I'm also going to take a family vacation around New Year's. And so I'm giving myself a little bit of a gift back, basically. So I flew up. And what they do is they have a mini convention the day before. It's lovely for a bunch of reasons. Number one, the stakes could not be lower. It is a wonderful, Juno is a warm, super warm, welcoming town of 30,000 people. And so it's the kind of thing that when you set up for an event like this, like let's say, Brad, we were a jazz festival, right?
Right,
and
right.
And we're going to be the Juno Jazz Festival. And everybody in Juno, if you don't love jazz, you're going to go to that jazz festival because they came to Juno. You know what I mean?
Right. And what else are you doing other than getting your sleeves muddy again?
Yeah. What are you going to get goosed at by a goose? So it's a town of 30,000 people. It's the capital of Alaska, 30,000 people. The only way in or out is by boat or plane. There's no streets that lead to Juno. You can't drive there. And right. So if somebody comes to Juno, they are so welcoming and like,
you're here.
Yeah. I had a woman fly down, a reader of mine who was lovely, who flew down on a water boat or a plane, whatever they're called, boat planes. What are they called?
Well, I guess water plane, because a water boat is redundant.
Water boat. It's a sky plane, Brad.
Although if you think about it, airplane is redundant too in that sense. But go ahead. She came in on a like one of those planes that had the water skis on the bottom of it so they can make a water landing.
Exactly. Like I was signing for her and I said, hey, thanks for having us here in Juno. And she goes, oh, I'm not from Juno. I flew here today on a water plane to see you because I knew you were in town. And I was like, a water plane? You flew on a water plane? What's happening?
Did you feel like, oh my God, I got to make sure that I sketch extra nice in this person's book.
Oh, absolutely. That's the equivalent of like, oh, I had to ride my moose here across the glacier so that I could... It just seemed like, anyway, so the Alaskans were incredibly warm. The stakes could not have been lower, though, Brad, because it's in a lovely cultural space that's about the equivalent size of 1.5 high school gyms, you know? And so the 78 of us set up little tables. It was kind of cute. It was like something we would have done when we were 21. But it was also because the stakes were so low, you were like, I'm going to go leave my table for a minute and go get some salmon. All right, I'm back. That was a delicious lunch. And like no one, like you didn't even put your money away. It was that kind of a show. Right, you know, it was like still sitting on your table.
The salmon was good. I mean, nothing but salmon up there to eat, right?
Yeah, they call it the chicken of Alaska.
Oh, man.
For me, who doesn't like fish, it was a little bit like, I don't know how I'm going to do. But there's like 48 ways to prepare salmon. So I was like, would you like salmon jerky, salmon sandwiches, barbecue salmon, salmon roasted salmon, toasted salmon? Anyway.
And our special salmon a la goose.
This one's been dipped in glacier water, New York.
You'll like this, Dave.
You'll like this one. It's got a tangy twist that you might be familiar with. Anyway.
No, I like salmon a lot. So that in as well sounds like it would be worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah. So anyway, so the show could not have been more low stakes. I think the whole like little mini Comic-Con, I made like $600, right? But that covers the flight. It covers the first night of hotel up there. It covers most of the incidentals. And it makes the show it makes the whole thing a write-off. I mean, not that it wouldn't be anyway, but... because it's continuing.
Well, that's just it.
You know, the whole thing is continuing learning, so the IRS would recognize that. But anyway, it makes it a nice write-off. I subsidize a little bit of the expenses. It's no big deal. The kids were it was so delightful to sketch for kids from Juneau who were sweet and kind and felt like a throwback to, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And anyway, so that was that. And then we all hop on a bus and drive out to Comics Camp. And the whole thing was just delightful. It felt like, you know, you earlier you said sixth grade camp or school camp or something like that. And that's a little bit what it felt like. The kind of camaraderie that you get after 3 or 4 days of doing every activity with the same 78 people, you know?
Right. And you start to, you start to let your defenses down. And again, you start to meet people and get to know them as something more than their avatars. And it's a fantastic way to actually, you know, break down barriers and get to know somebody.
Yeah. And it's fun because it's all a shared new experience too. Because most of these cartoonists, I mean, let's be honest, we're not a physical people cartoonists. We're not the most rugged of trades, you know. So when you go, when you drop them out into the wild, it's kind of fun that we're all sort of sharing. Like, you know, the first day the Alaskans get us there, and they're like, "Okay, so, it's probably not going to happen, but there are bears here."
You know, I love it when a sentence starts with, "It's probably not going to happen, but."
Yeah. So just FYI, bears exist and they're a thing. And, you know, immediately my Los Angeles heart starts palpitating. I'm like, oh, crap, bears. I forgot about bears. And they're like, if you're walking and you accidentally stumble upon a bear, do not run, because that will create an immediate dominance relationship. And you are clearly seen as the weak one if you're running.
And you're going to lose that bet.
You're going to lose that bet. Dave Kellett, you're very pale and out of shape. You are going to lose that bet. And so they said, what you want to do is you want to raise your hands above your head, wave them, you know, make yourself look physically taller than you are. And you want to announce yourself to the bear. So you go, hey, bear, over here, bear. Hey, bear. And by the way, I would be actively shitting my pants if I had to do that.
You would have been putting that goose to shame.
That goose would have been like, whoa, man, that guy knows what he's doing.
Find that guy a glacier.
Just actively emptying my bowels in a flight or fright response. Just actively emptying them. But anyway, well, I got to tell you this actually, because this is a funny story. So the whole weekend is a bunch of like sharing in a lot of community settings. So, you know, you're sharing tips and tricks on creative burnout and also like the emotional state that you're in as you're creative and how to cultivate, you know, like how to pull yourself out of dark days and how to enjoy the bright days as a cartoonist, all this sort of stuff. You know, the deep, you know, inner onion sharing that you get to with a couple of days together, right? That kind of stuff. And so... Dave Melke and I started having this bit of like, wouldn't it be funny if among these 78 cartoonists, Stan Lee was here? And so you just have like, all right, fantastic. We're having a great time here at Comics Camp. Great to see you. Good. Oh, hey, Maureen, I want to thank you for your ideas about working through a creative slump. You've really helped me with the Hobgoblin. And Lucy, I want to thank you for your thoughts on self-care. That's been fantastic. Anyway, and then but the problem with Stan Lee is he has an unnaturally huge fear of bears. So he's like walking out. He's walking out of the lodge and he's like, all right, well, anyway, it's been fantastic. I'm gonna head to the old cabin for old sleep for old Stan. And as soon as he hits the creaky door out of the lodge, he just immediately starts going, hey, bear, hey, bear, hey, bear, Stan Lee, hey, bear, hey, bear. And so that just became a runner towards the end of the weekend of like... All right, fantastic. Oh, I really appreciated your thoughts on comedy writing, and thank you for teaching me how to incorporate an S-Corp. All right. Hey, Bear! Hey, Bear! Stanley! Hey, Bear!
Oh, my God. Hey, Bear is killing me.
And so what happens is at 2 a.m. after you've been doing, you know, playing exquisite corpse all night, or so you'd be like, all right, good night, everybody. I'm gonna go to bed. Hey, Bear. Hey, Bear. We just started doing it all weekend.
Oh, yeah. And that's part of the beauty of a weekend like that is that you do have those punch drunk kind of, you know, 2 a.m. moments that everything is funnier than it actually is.
Oh,
you know
God,
what I mean?
Yeah. Well, part of the thing was, I don't even know if I've ever played it for you, but in the documentary that I made, Stripped, I had we had audio interview with Bill Watterson, right? And mm-hmm. so I had brought the audio up to Alaska to play for everybody. I wanted to play all 45 minutes, which nobody's ever heard before, because we only used like 3 or 4 minutes in the film. And so everybody was excited to hear it. But as a joke, what I wanted to do, Brad, was record some audio and be like, so, Mr. Watterson, can you tell me a little bit about Calvin and Hobbes? Yeah, so I'm drawing this comic strip, right? It's got this little kid, Calvin. He's like, you know.
And he's got that, what is it, a lion or a tiger? He's got a friend there. He's a lion.
You know, he's got some little piece of shit he carries around, and he imagines it's some kind of animal. I don't know, a duck, dog, who gives a shit? A tiger, let's just say a tiger. Anyway. So that was my other bit, was like, gutter mouth Bill Watterson all weekend anyway. So the I did want to tell you, though, because part of the thing was this weekend, Brad, honest to God, I was like, would Brad Geiger like this? Like, I was actively thinking about this back and forth all weekend. Would Brad Geiger enjoy this weekend? I think you would, but it's entirely possible that a part of you wouldn't like it. But I as a friend, I think the 10% that you didn't like, you and I would laugh so much about. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I would just sneak in a bottle of Lafroy. We would find a fireplace someplace and laugh our asses off. No, you're right in that, like, I don't know, crowds. It's a really weird type of thing. Like I can get into a group of people and it's just like, oh man, these are my favorite people in the whole wide world. I love every one of these people. People in general are great. And then the next week, and I can be like, I hate every one of these people. I don't know what I'm doing with these people around. You know, it's really hard. And I've lived inside this skull for 50 years. I wish I could tell you what the difference is between those two.
Yeah, what the triggering event is, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, but I'd love to find out because it sounds like it's a neat thing.
I think you should try it. And to that point, I should also say to all of our listeners, when the application gets opened up next year, I want you to apply because it's all levels of professionals from 1 year, 2 years, 20 years being a cartoonist, all levels of income from $2,000 a year to $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year cartoonists, and all levels of satisfaction with their art. And so, like, it's a really welcoming and wonderful atmosphere to have older cartoonists teaching younger cartoonists and younger cartoonists teaching older cartoonists new technology that they might not have known about. And,
all right, Dave, it's called Snapchat. All right, now here's what you do.
I'm not naming names, but Dave Kellett, he's not the young chicken that he once was. But like, so for the part of me that thinks like, oh, will Brad think that the sharing breakout sessions are a little too happy clappy? He might, but I think he would love 90% of the cartoonists getting around, and because you're a man that's always shared what you knew about cartooning, and you love learning about cartooning, and you love going back and forth with tips and tricks, and you also love camaraderie and long-term joking and all that sort of stuff. And I think you would have a fun time, and I want to encourage everybody listening to apply for next year. It is a unique and wonderful place.
So in other words, you don't have to be like a big leaguer. In other words, you don't have to sit there and think to yourself, oh, I'm not going to bother to apply because I'm not, you know, A-list or B-list. You can be somebody who's at the beginning of comics and learning or intermediate, and you'd still have just as much relevance and acceptance in this group as a David Malky or a Dave Kellett.
Yeah, and no, too, because I talked about it and we collectively talked about it. every single person in that room felt imposter syndrome for being there, myself included.
Wow. Like, really?
Yeah, like, I don't know. There's some really good cartoonists here. I Dave Kellett, don't belong here. This is not, they're so much better than me. I'll never write like that. I'll never draw like that. Look at how good they are. I'm still the insecure 13-year-old in the same way you're partially still the same insecure 13-year-old mm-hmm. that we were, you know? Mm-hmm. That there's a tiny part of that that never leaves our heart. And so no matter how much success and professionalism and years you gain, I mean, maybe you do in your 80s and you're like, to hell with it, I'm fine. But every once in a while, I'll still get imposter syndrome. And everyone else in the room felt that. And there's sort of a wonderfulness in everyone sharing that, acknowledging it, and moving past it. You know, it's great.
Yeah. And admitting it. Yeah. And saying, yeah, exactly. This is something we all have.
But I want to tell you a little bit about the format of the weekend, because it's this is the part that I found most lovely. You know, how you go to a comic con and there's panels, and it's in part to share knowledge, but it's also, you and I be honest, it's a little bit showboating. It's like it's a form of marketing in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So but the talks here at this show were the exact opposite. So the camp runs on Chatham House rules, which is it's an old British institutional rule system where you say anything that's said here, anything that's learned here can be shared. You just can't attribute who said it.
Mm, okay.
And so there's a sort of democratizing effect in that, because you are sharing ideas. You're getting the best of the camp out, but you're not embarrassing anybody by saying, oh boy, Dave Kellett cried when he shared about the creative blocks he had in the years past. You know, like, you don't embarrass anybody by throwing them under the bus, basically, you know?
And you have a certain degree of anonymity, which allows you to share even wider. In other words, you can say, well, here's what I'm doing on Patreon, and going into sharing some really, you know, like, bare bones kind of stuff, like numbers and percentages. And then you don't have to worry about somebody saying, oh, guess how much Dave Kellett's making on Patreon, right?
Right. Well, and Ryan North of Squirrel Girl and Dinosaur Comics and Dave Malky of Wonder Mark and I at one point made a little chart. And I think I can share it with everybody on Patreon. So look for it with this podcast, because I think Chatham House rules will allow me to share a visual. I'm not sure. I'll check with Pat on that. But what we did is we made a chart with an XY plane, an XY axis, that one plane tracks how many years you've been working as a professional cartoonist. The other mm-hmm. plane, or the axis, was how much money you made, gross income, in 2018 from your cartooning. And and then additionally, when you marked which box you were in, you marked it with one of three colors, saying you were satisfied with your career, so-so with your career, dissatisfied with your career. And so anonymously, we were able to track three different points of data for every cartoonist in the show. And there were people that were making $2,000 a year that had just started cartooning in the last 2 years. There were people that were making over $100,000 a year that had been working for 20 years, you know, that kind of thing. And so... I think it was helpful, especially for the 20-year-old cartoonist, to see, like, oh, it is possible, actually, to have a really good living in cartooning. And it was possible for cartoonists in the middle of the road to say, oh, it's okay that I'm making what I'm making and I'm satisfied, because look at all these other people who are satisfied. And it was also helpful to see, like, people could be making way over $100,000 and also be dissatisfied. And so it's also worth noting that, you know, like... depression can come for us all, and lows can come for us all, and dissatisfaction with our work that might be, you know, us ready for plateauing to the next level can happen. So anyway, what I'm getting at is it was really helpful just to see the spectrum of cartooning in an honest and clear and open way while still being anonymous, you know?
So like, Dave, for an example, if I'm looking at this chart and it's got the three different dots, one for dissatisfied, one for kind of satisfied, one for very satisfied. What you're saying is that there would be kind of an equal distribution of each color at all the different places. And in other words, I can be dissatisfied here, or I could be dissatisfied there. And at the same time, I could be very satisfied on one side of the spectrum and very satisfied at the other. In other words, it's not like everything breaks down evenly. It sounds like these levels of satisfaction and dissatisfaction would be scattered all over the chart. Am I getting that right?
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that we were hoping this chart would do, and I think it did, is to basically tell you, no matter where you were, both in your years of professionalism and your income and your level of satisfaction, it's kind of like anonymously putting a hand on everyone's shoulder and being like, you're doing fine. You're doing okay. Everyone has this kind of year. Everyone has that kind of year. Everyone can be satisfied or dissatisfied. We've all gone through different levels in our career, and you're doing fine. You know, it gives you a sense of the broader spectrum, but also places you within it, and you go, okay, it basically lets you know you're not the outlier. You know,
right?
You're not the weirdo, because so much of what we do in a career in cartooning, Brad, is we feel like, am I the only one that does it this way? Is everyone else succeeding and I'm the only one failing? Does everyone else feel like they're satisfied and I'm the only one that feels dissatisfied? And yes, so there's reassurance in just going, you're not alone. Everyone is like you. We all have our ups and our downs, and we all have our stumbles, and we all have our good days. And so that chart was really helpful. And then we did
The other takeaway, there is, I would be happier if I was making more money.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that chart dispels that. In other words, you could be happier at the level that you're at right now. It's going to take more than just money. I mean, listen, there's part of that argument that's a little disingenuous. Not being able to pay your bills makes you very unhappy. But that aside, you can see that dissatisfaction happens at all levels and is not really linked directly to money, and the same thing for satisfaction, right?
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this on past shows, but there's that idea of the hedonic treadmill or hedonic adaptation where, you know, once you've achieved X amount of income, and let's just say that's a standard basis for living, kind of an income,
right?
You don't necessarily get happier, aside from a brief spike of when it first happens, you don't necessarily get happier with more money. You return to a relatively stable point that you were at before you had the money, you know? And so that's a very human and very broad reaction that money does not necessarily equal happiness. To your point, it does very much when you can't pay the bills or when there's a medical crisis or that kind of thing. But once you've reached whatever level of stasis in your region is, $30,000, $40,000, $60,000 a year, getting to $200,000 a year will briefly make you happier. But at some point, you will return back on that treadmill to the stability of where you were before. In hedonic adaptation. So anyway,
you're looking for happiness in your checkbook, you're not going to find it.
Yeah.
You got to find that happiness someplace else.
And one of the ways that I found it really satisfying is there were some people that make $5,000 a year from their cartooning, have a day job, and totally satisfied. That's what they want.
Right.
You know, they know that their creativity works best with a steady income, and then they cartoon on nights and weekends, and that is fine. That is okay. That is a wonderful way to go through life. So I was happy to see all those, both the people that were dissatisfied making a ton of money and the people that were very satisfied making a smaller amount of money. You know, that. So anyway, I just found that really helpful to see. Because the anonymity, we don't share that much, you know?
Right.
And so...
Well, because we're scared to. And also, this it sounds like this comics camp creates a very safe space to do that kind of sharing.
Yeah, well, with Chatham House rules and between, you know, the certain camaraderie that builds, you get a nice shared sense of, like, I can let my guard down, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics.
So anyway, I got off topic, though. What I want to say is, you know, a Comic-Con panel is a known quantity. It's like you get one to five people up on a show, a raised platform. They talk about their comic, or they talk about, you know, whatever they do with their business or whatever they... And then 50 to 80 people file in, and then they go back to Comic-Con, and that's the standard Comic-Con convention panel, right?
Right,
but
right.
At this weekend, because there were cabins scattered around the 4 or 5 acres of the camp, and because there was a lodge, what we would do is we would say, all right, everybody, here's the schedule for today. It's breakfast. And then there were three possible classes starting at 9 a.m., right? And you would have like how to write humor, how to create a watercolor kit that can travel, or, you know, how to structure your business, whether it's a corporation or an LLC. Like, that would be the three classes at 9 a.m., right? And what's lovely is it was taught by other cartoonists, professionals who are arguably the best at doing what that is, you know, whatever that class is. So you'd have like an amazing watercolorist teaching watercoloring, or you'd have one of the best writers in comics on humor teaching how to write humor, or somebody who has incorporated and does their accountancy as an S corp talking about incorporating your business. And so you'd have, and then, you know, you'd be like, all right, then the 15 minute break for everybody to get a glass of water or something, like, or get a coffee. And then, the next breakout session, we're going to be, I'm trying to remember the other one, but there were also a couple of silly classes. You know, there'd be stuff like, all right, we're going to make friendship bracelets at 11 o'clock. Just sit around and talk shop.
Well, yeah, because I'll bet you some of the best conversations happen at the friendship bracelet, because as you're doing this kind of mindless task of weaving colored threads, the conversation happens, and that's probably where some of the most best stuff is found, is when you're just kind of opening up, speaking off the top of your head.
Oh, I gotta tell you, Brad, I the whole weekend was wonderful conversation after wonderful conversation. And I know this sounds like me just saying the same thing over and over again, but like when you put 78 people that are of the same creative field together, and then you take away their internet for 4 days, and then you give them beer and scotch and coffee and warm fires, and then you're like, yeah, oh, amazing conversations spring up about all sorts of aspects of being a cartoonist. I learned stuff that I'm going to use immediately, and stuff that I'm going to carry with for years from that. And also, there was just a lot of pleasant conversations about the trickier parts about being a cartoonist. And it was, yeah, like you said, like there was the mindless stuff, because really a part of this camp is it also allows you not only to let your guard down emotionally, but to let your guard down in terms of like, I got to move, I got to do, I got to create. I'm wasting my time if I'm not producing right now, Brad.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there is an importance for letting an adult play. And this weekend allowed for a lot of play, both in controlled settings and in just spontaneous settings of, you know, Kazu Kibuishi and I grabbing baseball gloves and throwing up baseball, which I haven't done in like 4 years.
Did
just
you take
a baseball.
Your glove?
What's that?
Did you take your glove? I saw he was tweeting.
He brought multiple gloves, God bless him. Oh. And so we played catch, and it was so lovely to just talk and play catch.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that kind of spontaneous play. When in my life would I be like, hey, other adult, want to come over to my house and play baseball? Just throw a ball around for a minute?
Yep. Yep.
If I call Brad, if you lived in my town and I called you up and said, Brad, hey, you want to come over and throw a baseball around? You'd be like, what an asshole. I've got stuff to do. No. I don't want to throw
what
a baseball.
What do I look like?
Yeah. What am I, 10? I'm not driving over to your house to throw a baseball around.
No, no. I'm right. What do you want me to do? Ride my bike over? Hit the little bell as I hit your driveway?
Yeah, let me ask Mom if I can get 35 cents for an ice cream on the way over, you know? So, but
do you think Mrs. Kellett's going to have Kool-Aid?
Yeah. Hey, Ms. Kell, can I stay for dinner? You sure can. Oh, yeah. I'll call my mom. So we can keep playing baseball until dusk. Anyway.
Oh, the street lights are on. I got to go home.
Yeah, exactly. So what was I going to say? But so, you know, I'm cynical about it. You're cynical about it as an adult, but mm-hmm. the ability for an adult to play, just to play for hours on end, or to let your guard down and relax and truly giggle. Like, I giggled and laughed all weekend. And go talk to anybody that went to this camp. I laughed all weekend. I laughed straight for 4 days. To the point where, in fact, so I was sharing a lodge with Scott Campbell, who's an incredible artist and watercolorist and is wonderful. God. And with Dave Malky and his wife, Nikki Malky. And the four of us were up in kind of a lofted area of one of the cabins. Like, it was this cute, you had to climb up a wooden ladder to get up there. And but Nikki Malky said at one point, as she woke up in the middle of the night and I was snoring, Dave was snoring, and Scott C was snoring, but none of us were snoring in sync. So she said it was maddening that we were just off a little tiny bit. It was like a Three Stooges sketch, she said. But anyway, to the earlier point that I was laughing all weekend, she said though that in the middle of all this, she was sitting there going, good God, what have I gotten myself into? I'm sleeping with three people that are snoring. She said, all of a sudden, in my sleep, I just started giggling. And I was like, God, isn't that representative of the weekend that I'm having? Then I just started giggling in my sleep. And she said it was so cute. She said, like, you know, as a mom herself, she's like, it was so adorable that you just started giggling in the middle of your sleep. And so I think it was just that I was happy. I was super happy all weekend because I had a wonderful mix of like creative enrichment, of sharing of tips and tricks, and also just play. And so it was really, it was a lovely, I just keep saying the same thing over again. It was just so lovely. But anyway, being taught by fellow cartoonists.
It sounds tremendous. But now back up a little bit for me structurally. So you said like you'd have breakfast and then 9 o'clock, there's three classes and then there's a break and then there's another time slot of classes. How many of those time slots would have been throughout the day?
There was 4 slots of 3 classes each. So each day offered you 12 class possibilities.
Oh my God. So that you could take amazing.
You could take 4 classes a day. Or Brad, there was one time slot where I actually did want to go to class, but I needed a little bit of a recharge. And so I sat at the back of the lodge away from one of the classes so that I wasn't actively involved, but I was listening to someone talking about writing. And I was just sketching. I just, you know, sketched 50 feet away from everybody else. And I got to tell you, in a group of introverts, no one's going to bother you if you're like, I just need a half an hour of just, you know, my own time over here.
Right.
And but at the same time, if someone did come up, you'd be like, yeah, sure, take a seat and we'll just sketch silently together or we'll sketch each other, which was also fun. Mm-hmm. So it allowed a flexibility. No one was saying, hey, Brad, you signed up for my course on podcasting, which there was one. You signed up for my course on podcasting, but you didn't come. And so you don't, you know, like no one was going to be mad at you. It'd be like, oh, no, Brad's having a beer with you know, Tony Cliff right now. He didn't come. All right, well, that's fine. Fuck it. We'll see him later. What I'm getting at is you were totally flexible and free. If you decided you wanted to go hike down to the Glacier Lake, then you could go hike down to the Glacier Lake. And so you didn't have to do anything, you know? So it was incredibly free. And I'm just trying to think, too, of other classes that we had. There were other ones on how to construct your own sketchbook, how to illustrate artifacts in a museum-type setting, how to do printmaking. There was a bunch more that I can think of later. But anyway, just imagine what kind of courses you would want at a cartooning convention or not at a cartooning getaway. And it was there. It was there for you. It was great.
And it's amazing. I mean, part of me thinks, oh my gosh, how could they cram that much time in? How can they cram that much class into that small amount of time? But then again, you've got a whole bunch of people who are saying, okay, I'm not going to let deadlines hover over me for the next couple of days. And you've got a bunch of people who are without a cell signal or a Wi-Fi connection. So they don't have all of those distractions, right?
Well, health-wise, I have to tell you, being without internet, and I know there are 1,000 articles saying this, but it's not making us happier having all this connection, this constant connection. And being disconnected for 4 days, just being able to take a break from the constant pulling your phone out of your pocket and checking things, I was a happier man. At the end of those 4 days. And so I'm actively thinking now, how do I go about limiting these notifications on my phone? How do I go about limiting the times that I check my phone? How do I go about upping my presence with another person? That if I'm sitting across with you, Brad, I'm not checking my phone. I'm genuinely listening to you, you know?
Right, right. You know, what happened with me with phones is when they first came out, like I'd be talking to somebody and they would get their phone out and check their phone as I was talking to them. And I got really personally offended or hurt. It's like, wait a minute, I'm talking here. And if I'm not interesting enough to keep your attention, just tell me and I'll stop talking. But, and then what happened over a period of time is you start to accept that behavior and you even start to maybe do it a little bit yourself. And I caught myself doing that a few times in social settings. And I disliked it so much. In myself, exhibiting that in myself, that I'm like, that's it. I'm going to make it a conscious effort not to do that anymore. Because what happens is you start to accept it, and then you start to do it, and we're ending up putting up all these walls between us and other people. And whether you realize it or not, if somebody's talking and you take your phone out and start scrolling through Facebook, you're sending a really nasty message to that person.
You know what? I'm so sorry I didn't hear anything you said. I was just checking my Twitter real quick.
You dirty bird, you. But
anyway, so sometimes you come back from a vacation or a trip and everyone hates you because you're like, Everyone in your life hates you because you're like, oh, Brad, I did yoga on my trip so much, and now I'm going to be a changed person. I'm going to do yoga all the time. And then it takes 2 weeks and you're back to your normal self. So I understand that right now I might sound like a jerk by saying I actively want to limit how my phone and how my computer email can impact my life. But I'm really serious. I want to figure out ways, and I want to, if anyone wants to suggest apps or things that can limit strategies that you've used to limit the impact of your phone on your day-to-day life, I would love to hear it on the Discord chat for Patreon folks or on the comments of the Patreon page. I would love to hear it. So please submit your ideas for that, because this is Dave Kellett as a friend saying, I would like to continue this process of limiting my phone's impact on my life. And I would love to hear any strategies that you have used. So,
So
reevaluating your general happiness, I have to say the other thing that I came away with from the weekend is I feel so lucky and so blessed that I get to be a cartoonist. And I come out of this weekend, just feeling content. Like in some respects, yes, I always have to live nervous and hungry, you know, because you never want to have a failure catch you unaware or unguarded. But I have to, after coming out this weekend, I have to give myself credit that, Brad, we did it. You know, we did the thing that we set out to do.
It is rarefied air, right? I mean, this thing that we've accomplished or this thing that we've worked towards is very, very special.
Yeah, and now it's sort of weird because I understand that I'm a dad and I understand that I'm older, but there was another cartoonist that looked at me this weekend at the camp and was like, "You're kind of like a comics dad," and I was like, "Hey,
I kind of am.
I guess I kind of am." But I'm at that point there where I'm sharing with younger cartoonists, and that's lovely. You know, it's wonderful because that's what I always wanted when I was 20 and looked around and didn't have any artists in my life and wished that someone could have, you know, helped me along the right path.
That's such a great point, Dave.
What?
When we were young, who was our comics dad or who was our comics mom? I mean, there was nobody that played that role for us.
Right, right. And honest to God, Brad, if I can share something in a setting like this comics camp that can save someone 2 to 5 years of trouble, how wonderful is that, you know? Like, there were some stumbles and wrong paths that you and I took early in our career that we'd be like, do not do X, Y, and Z. Like, just trust me, don't do this. And if I can save someone that trouble, what a wonderful feeling to pay that forward, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, as much as my inner 22-year-old self was like, I'm not a comics dad, I was like, oh, that's kind of lovely that, you know?
Well, in as much as that it's a privilege to be a cartoonist, it's also kind of a nice little privilege to be able to reach out as somebody who has been doing this for a while and has a little bit of experience and being able to say, okay, here's what I think. Here's what I've learned. Take it for what it's worth. It may not be relevant to you and the world you live in today, but here it is.
Right.
You know, take it. Take it and make it fit your life. That's kind of a special thing to be able to share. And again, I don't know whether maybe I'm a doofus, but it just hit me, you know, back 20 years ago when we were starting out, there was nobody who was willing to play that role in our community.
Yeah, I don't.
For us. It's really, it's smacking me right in the face. And part of that was because the internet hadn't developed to that point. There was no podcast. There was no social media. It was a much, much different landscape. But there was nobody even willing to say, hey, I'm going to mentor some younger people and share them with what I know. I guess it's surprising me that that was the case more than it should.
Right. And I know that that's the case because I reread the long out of print now Lee Nordling book, Your Career in the Comics. I reread that thing probably 40 times, that book, when I was 18, 19, 22, whatever it was, because it was like the only resource that kind of peeled back the curtain and says, like, here's how cartoonists do what they do. And and I was amazed by anyway. So, yes, I know what you mean. And it just feels like this was the cartooning home that my inner 20-year-old had been looking for 20, 25 years, you know?
Yeah,
where it's all these wonderful people of all walks of life, all backgrounds from all geographic areas, getting together, sharing about comics, talking about their stumbles and their hiccups and their highs and how they worked through both, and sharing what they knew and laughing all weekend. So you know what? I want to finish up though, because we talked about, like, you'd wake up, you'd have breakfast, and there's a wonderful camp chef named Jesse who made all the meals, so you didn't have to think about that too, which was also lovely.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. So she made these fantastic meals. And then you would have two breakout sessions. And then you get together for lunch again. And then two more breakout sessions. And then dinner. And then here's the amazing thing about being in Alaska. The sun goes down, like 9, 9:30, 10 p.m. I don't remember what time it went down, but like super late. So after dinner, if you want to go for a 2-mile hike, you can go for a 2-mile hike. If you want to go, you know, play basketball outside for a little bit, you can go play basketball outside for a little bit. And what that meant is that we would end up having more sharing sessions after dinner, through dinner and after dinner. And then you would end up, the nights would, we would bust out one of 100 different board games, or we would invent games. God, there were a lot of people inventing games this weekend.
Wow.
Or we would do games like Exquisite Corpse or Telestration, if you've ever played either of those, and just laughing until, you know, 2, 3 a.m. And, you know, it's funny, at one point we were playing Telestration, and, I was playing, I think it was with Scott C and, Tony Cliff and a bunch of other people. Anyway, we were playing Telestration, and then Pat Race comes in and goes, "Hey everybody. So turns out there's a pack of wolves outside. So if anyone's going to walk to their cabin, maybe don't walk by yourself." And so it was so funny, cause there was one girl who was heading towards the door. She's like, "Good night, everybody." And you could see it as Pat was saying it. It was like a comedic, like immediate U-turn back to the table. Like, "All right, I'll play one more round. I'm fine. I'm going to rejoin the group. Yeah, deal me back in. I'll play one more round of poker. That's fine." So it was so comedic, like reaching for the door, but like almost like a Three Stooges turn of like, "Nope, coming right back in. Here we go." And so it was just, it was a lovely balance of everything that you would want from a camp, but also just cartoonists supporting whether you know, because, you know, there was one or two people in the camp, and maybe better to say more like a dozen people in the camp, that were going through a tricky time, either personally or professionally. Someone had died in their family. Someone was dying in their family. Their career, a project had failed, which we've all had. A project was failing, which we've all had. And it's so nice to be able to openly share that and have people go, "I have been there. I am going through what you have gone through," or "there is light at the other end of the tunnel."
Right,
because you're not going to share that on, you know, publicly. You're not going to be like, "Oh boy, this project's really going terrible. no one's buying this at comic book shops." But you're sharing it there. You're like, "Oh, I get it. And here's how it's probably going to work out for you, and how you're going to be okay in the end." You know?
Yeah. So now you've got a lot of creative people there, like a whole bunch of creativity under one roof. I got to imagine that at some point a couple people pair up and they say, "Oh, wouldn't it be great if we did this?"
Or wouldn't
it be neat to do something that you and I have never thought of doing, but I just had this idea and you'd be the perfect person to do it with? Did that happen at all?
Not only did it happen at all, it was more strange when it didn't happen. Like, there were all sorts of people that I was like, "Hey, I think I might like to hire you to do flatting for my comics," or, "Hey, I think I would love to hire you to do a drive short story," or, "Hey, I think I would love to maybe work on a new comic title with you," or, "Hey, let's go over here, that game idea that you were talking about, let's go develop it over here. We'll just get scraps of paper and some dice and some cards." And like, so I know games got started at that this weekend that I hope will be developed. Comics ideas got launched, anthologies got launched this weekend that I hope will be developed. So there was all sorts of stuff that was just, even if this weekend the project itself wasn't named out loud, the relationship that started it is going to be, it's going to ripple forward like a snowball down a hill, you know? New friendships, cementing old friendships, conversations that start whole new lines of thought. There was a lot of amazing creativity going on around me. And I heard people at the end of the weekend talking about like, "All right, so I'm going to fly down. We're going to talk about this. We're going to work on this project. Or, you know, next time you're in Atlanta, we're going to circle up and we're going to do this." And it was really lovely to see. It's like when you scatter a bunch of pool balls across a table and they all start clacking in ways you didn't expect, you know?
Yeah.
So people that write comics for kids talking to people that write about, I think of literally any other genre, and you'd be like, "I never would put them together." And they're like, "Hey, you know what? We could work together. That'd be super fun." And so for me, I have at least 6 or 7 new names that I want to work with coming out of this weekend. And I saw with my own eyes, a bunch of other people, dozens of other people, had the same. So, it's really, I know this is going to sound like an hour of me going, "Oh boy, what a great weekend. Oh, we sure had a lot of fun there. Oh boy, everything was amazing. And the world normal and nothing is wrong and people are light and beauty. But it kind of was that. You have the glow coming off of that weekend, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think the whole point is to hold on to that for as long as you can. That's the whole point of a weekend like that in the first place.
Yeah. And so at the end of it, friends were sitting around going, all right, what cartoonists are not here that would enjoy this weekend? And we started creating this long list of people. And you were so fixated on my list because I got to get you out once to try it and just to see, even if you're like, ha, David, that, oh boy, that wasn't for me. Even if it's that, I know there will be huge chunks of the weekend that you and I will have so much fun that I got to get you come out at least once. Do you think you would do it after we've talked now for an hour about it?
I am really miserable that I didn't go this year. I am if at all I can, let me put it to you this way. Unless there's like a major thing standing in the way, I'm definitely signing up and seeing if they'd accept me.
Well, that was one of my jokes, by the way, in terms of being accepted. I was joking around that if I apply next year and Pat is like, well, Dave, you know, not a lot of room at the camp. We're kind of constricted in who we can accept. Sure was fun having you last year, though. That was great.
We're gonna really miss hearing hello bear, in the Stan Lee voice every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I really loved hearing that before I got my coffee in the morning. Thanks so much for that. Really needed that wake me up Stan Lee impression. Thanks for that. That was great.
Hello bear, hello bear. That's as close as I can get.
Who was it? I can't name names because it was Chatham House Rules. But one cartoonist turned to me at one point, and she goes, "You're always on, aren't you?" And I was like, "I guess so."
My secret, Captain.
Yeah, I'm always on. She's like, she was like, "It's 7:30 a.m. How are you this on?" I was like, "Well, I don't know."
No, I definitely want to try and go. It sounds like now answer me this one question and
riddle
maybe an
me
unfair,
this, Batman. Okay, go ahead.
Riddle me this. Okay, 78 people. Break it down by percentages. How many people did you talk to a lot? How many did you talk to a little? And how many did you talk to not at all? Because there had to been some people that you just were like, oh, well, this person was there, but we either, for any number of reasons, didn't hit it off, or maybe our paths just never crossed. How many people do you actually interface with out of 78?
Well, first of all, that's a really intuitive insight that absolutely was the case. And so if you reimagine that pool table visual metaphor again and you scatter all the 15 balls of a pool table, you know, three or four of them are never going to hit. One of them are going to glancingly hit another, and then a bunch of them are going to keep rehitting each other in a corner or something, right? And so out of the 78 people, I'm going to say 30 to 40 of them I interacted with. Well, okay, hold on. 10 to 15, I really heavily interacted with, like a lot of conversations, kept going back to points, kept revisiting ideas and reevaluating stuff we had talked about earlier, you know, that kind of thing, like laughing jokes, runners that were going all weekend, you know, continuing bits that we were doing for other people. So 10 or 15 people were about that. A further 10 or 15 people were, boy, in any other setting, had I talked to them a lot over these 4 days, I really kept going, you know, a lot of chats, a lot of group chats. A lot of group games, a lot of sharing. And then, so that's about 30 people. Then another 15, there were glancing conversations, right? So that now we're at, 45 people. And then the last 20 to 30, and I think this is fair, it was only a passing like conversation or a little bit of sharing, but not really that deep, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably representative of everybody, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's going to be some people that you're just not only like personalities that just naturally don't mix very well, but just out of logistics. I mean, you can't have deep, meaningful conversations with 78 people, each one of them over the course of 4 days. There's just not enough minutes in the day to be meaningful.
Right. And so it's a version of that old saying that if you're doing a bunch of things, you're not doing any of them well. If you're having conversations with 78 people, you're not getting deep with anyone really, you know? So I think my example is representative of probably what everybody had of some version of that, you know, and that's okay. Like there were cartoonists that I desperately wanted to hang out with that weekend that for whatever reason, we just never really crossed paths. We're like, you know, they were off hiking at the time that I was wanted to do the class, or, you know, they were sitting on the other end of the 78 people eating dinner and when I was over on this end, and that's okay. That's a human reaction. And, or that's a human series of events. That's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But I made a bunch of new friends, cemented a bunch of old ones. And I think really that it's kind of delightful to look around a room and see the cartoonists that are, their energy levels are wonderful and warm and who probably did interact with all 78 people. Like, Lucy Bellwood, I find just to be a ray of sunshine. She's just full of energy and joy and bouncing around a room and warm and welcoming. Ryan North, there's not a person in the world that dislikes Ryan North, and he is so fun for everyone to talk to. I think he probably hung out with everyone. Anyway, what I'm getting at is I was okay. I'm sure there are people that were better in terms of socializing with everyone, but I'm also completely at peace with the fact that I got the percentages that I did, you know?
Yeah. No, that's it sounds like a really fantastic week.
I as I said at the top of the show, it was maybe one of the best weekends of my adult life. It's like 4 days. It was one of the best extended weekends of my adult life. I think I will do this any year that they will have me from now on. It was so great. And I'm going to come back to it again. I encourage everyone to check out both the hashtag Comics Camp on Twitter. You can see some pictures, although you might not see mm-hmm. stuff that's truly personal. You'll just see generic kind of like, here's what the camp looks like. Here's what we're doing there.
Yeah.
But check out the hashtag Comics Camp and then also apply next year because boy, howdy. You know what? One thing, Brad, I totally forgot to, this is totally jumping topics, but I wanted to share this too.
Yeah.
In addition to that chart that we had about sharing what you made in 2018 income wise, Lucy Bellwood, oh darn it, I broke Chatham House rules, but I don't think she'll mind. Lucy Bellwood came up with a really great idea that I jumped into wholeheartedly, which is we had a printer there and she printed out a bunch of circles. And then our job was to fill in the pie chart using different colors with our different income sources, right?
Yeah. So
Kickstarter, paid speeches, lecturing, freelance work, royalties, advances for a book publishing deal, Patreon. Convention sales, online sales, right? I think Lucy had, I got to stop saying her name because I'm definitely breaking Chatham House rules now. So now, Brad, watch me switch gears. So the person whose idea this was.
You know what's going to happen? Next year, I am going to be up there and I'm going to be like, where's Kellett? And they're going to go, Chatham House, he's out.
Chatham House rules. It's they're just like punching their fist. We don't mess around about that.
He got a little chatty on the Chatham House.
Yeah. Or I get up there for next year and Lucy's just got on like the brass knuckles. She's like, so I heard you mention my name on Comic Lab. Yeah, you broke the golden rule, my friend. Now you got to pay the price. You got to pay the price.
First rule at Comics Camp, you don't talk about Comics Camp.
She's like, I asked you one thing, you son of a bitch. Don't mention Lucy Bellwood. You broke the rule. Now I got to break your face.
Get my name out of your mouth.
Get my name out of your mouth. Get my name out of your dirty mouth, you sharer. Anyway.
Oh, but these pie charts sound great because imagine. Go ahead.
I want to finish the visual for you because you and I, and we would talk about this before, you and I have virtually identical income streams. Well, no, not true, but very similar income streams. But your and my pie chart would look totally different. But now imagine people from all walks of cartooning and all spectrums of how they make their living. And there were no two pie charts on that wall that looked identical. And to me, it was reinforcing what you and I talk about all the time, which is there are a billion paths to that same mountain. Whatever you can do to make yourself, to keep your cartooning career going, that's success. If it keeps you going for one more year, it doesn't matter if it was lecturing on cartooning, doing freelance work at cartooning, a web comic, a publishing deal, whatever it was, great. You have made a go of it in one of the hardest careers possible to break into. Because as someone else, I won't say their name, at the conventions reminded us all, there are fewer professional cartoonists than there are NBA players, you know?
Yeah.
And so if
that's
you
true.
Can, however you can configure that pie chart to make a quote unquote career, good for you. And anyway, it was really encouraging and interesting to look at this pie chart And it was also fun. Another person who I won't mention and I were standing in front of the wall going, let's see who we can figure out, like just based on the pie chart. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, let's yeah, because you didn't put a name on them, so they're all anonymous. So it's like, this one is Ryan.
Right, exactly. So if I was standing in front of a Brad Geiger pie chart, I was like, oh, a lot of Patreon here. I don't see any comics convention income. Huh, I wonder if that's Brad Geiger.
Yeah, that's got to be Brad.
Yeah, that's Brad. And then, here's one with blood transfusion. That's got to be Brad. Yep, all right, here we go.
Patreon, Kickstarter, and blood transfusions. Yeah, that's Brad.
Yeah, that's Brad. I know he sells blood on the side. So anyway, it was really fun to kind of reverse engineer whose career was. And then some were surprising. Like, we did a few because you would kind of quietly go up to him and be like, is that you? And they would be like, uh-huh, good job. But then it was kind of amazing because it would be like, I'm surprised. I never would have guessed that you would make 5 to 10% of your career on speaking fees about cartoonists or on corporate consulting with a video game company. I didn't even know you did that. And they're like, well, I don't talk about it, but Bungie keeps hiring me to, you know, develop a script for such and such. And you're like, wow, that's great. And so I learned just by that kind of sharing too, like A, all the different varieties of how cartoonists can make their income, and then B, oh boy, there's a couple income streams, Brad, that I've never thought of before that maybe old Dave's got to go back to the drawing board on some of these income streams.
It's called the drawing board. Can you tell me what some of those income streams are, or is that for a private conversation?
No.
Like the ones you hadn't thought of.
I think with the very clever woman who came up with this had a let's see if I took a photo of it. I like that I'm now just saying the very clever woman.
Now, yes.
I like that after you drop the bomb, you like then try to reinforce Chatham House rules. I'm like, so anyway, over the course of Comics Camp, poor Brad Geiger just had explosive diarrhea the whole weekend. Oh gosh, Chatham House rules. Anyway, one guy just had explosive diarrhea the whole weekend. You try to like recover.
You'd smell him half a mile away, but sure. I'm telling you.
I tell you what, he didn't need to yell, hey, bear. That guy, the bears were very aware of where he was.
And not interested at all.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I don't have a photo of it, so I don't remember it from memory, but it was possibly 20 colors that you could choose from on the pie chart. And like I said, everything from consulting to teaching to occasionally lecturing, Patreon, Kickstarter, eBay, PayPal, tips, PayPal direct, you know, all these sort of things. What else? Publishing, royalties, past sales, comic book store signings, comic conventions, all sorts of stuff. And it was just really interesting to see. And some people had two wedges, right? Like, it was 50-50, blank and blank, right? And then there were other cartoonists that had 30 little wedges. And it's interesting. You know, and frankly, I personally feel like that's the safer career, the 30 little wedges, than the two big wedges. Because if your publisher, if you get a new editor, if you have a new hiccup with one of your books, maybe those two wedges aren't quite enough to have a, you know. But then again, if you're making $250,000 a year and you're with your publishing, then maybe you're doing just fine and you don't worry about that. But so anyway, it's funny to see all the different varieties of income, and it was fun to see all the ways you could construct a career, and even that is super helpful.
So what's one of the wedges that you may add to your pie chart next year?
Well, here's the thing. It's a little bit like looking for the door to Narnia. The one that I was amazed to see was the number of cartoonists that do corporate consulting or corporate speaking for Google or Bungie or Microsoft or Apple. And I was like, well, how come they're not calling me? I'm delightful.
Yeah.
I'm great.
Yeah.
Why is Bungie not calling me?
And you do a podcast every week in which you show how good you can talk.
So that one, and I'm serious about it, like, that's a little bit like trying to find the door to Narnia, because like I can't make that happen. I can't suddenly stir up a speaking manager at Pixar to be like, oh, you know what? We should have Dave Kellett up, that kind of thing. But anyway, so that was sort of a fascinating income stream for cartoonists that I was like, okay, somewhere in my mind, I knew that must exist, but I hadn't seen it quantified of, oh, that's 5% of your career. Oh, that's 10% of your career. That's amazing.
Oof. That is impressive.
Well, you know, some of those speaking fees, it's like, yeah, we'll give you $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to fly down for 2 days. And you know, like that can really quickly form a chunk of your income if you get one or two of those a year. So,
And probably really, there's a lot of side opportunities that come up through something like that as well.
Now
that, if you tell me that you did that and you had networking opportunities that we always talk about for comic conventions, if you talked about those networking opportunities, I'd believe you.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, so that's a representative, Brad, of one of the income streams that just never occurred to me, and probably with good reason, because I don't have control over that. But anyway, it had never occurred to me to think, oh, there are some professional cartoonists that do 10% of their income is just consulting on a Marvel movie or, you know, that kind of thing. So, I overall, though, that pie chart system that lovely woman had come up with was very, very interesting. And
oh, man. So now it's Alaska Robotics Comics Camp. It happens. Does it happen every year in April?
Yeah. So the idea is that they hold it. I think Pat would, he can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the idea is they do it 1 week or 2 weeks before the tourist season officially starts in Juneau, where the first cruise ship pulls in, you know? And so all the prices are still affordable. All the camps are still available. The weather's a little dicey perhaps, but you're just on the edge of a full spring. And so in my case, the weather was 50 to low 60s the whole time we were there, which was delightful for that time of year. And no mud on the ground, a little bit of like iced snow still, but no mud. And that's fantastic. That's great. You'll take that all day long, you know?
Yeah. And also if you want to see a little bit more about what it was like, because I this past weekend, I became very, very good at stalking you. Check out Pat Race's Twitter. Because he's been retweeting a lot of all of the different people that have come back and started sharing on social media, and he's retweeting all of it. So if you don't get enough through the Comics Camp hashtag, go follow Pat on his Twitter, and he's been retweeting a ton of it. And again, it really looks like it was a lot of fun. I'm thinking I may have to join you there next year.
And Pat's Twitter, just to helpfully point you in the right direction, is Alaska Robotics, all one word, on Twitter. And then in the interest of sharing, the website that you'll want to bookmark for next, I think it was around midwinter, I want to say, when the applications were due. I'm not sure. But
it was January.
What's that?
It was January.
Oh, was it January? Okay. So over at alaskarobotics.com is where you'll get more information about the comics camp. You can see all the people that came. I think there's a video of previous years. So you could, that's kind of fun. I should go back and watch that. I didn't actually watch that video, but there's a video of previous years and photos from previous years of all the cartoonists that have gone. And I can't say enough good things.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a good time, but I'm very happy to have you back because I missed my podcasting partner because you're one of the few people that I can say this to, and I mean this with all my heart. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been the bait and switch Brad Geiger, the editor.
Man, I had you right where I wanted you, didn't I?
You know, because I'm in a place of sharing, Brad. My heart is open. I'm feeling sensitive and unguarded, and then you go and do the outro on me. Anyway, your hosts have been that old-timey son of a bitch, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com. Don't forget to check out the Kickstarter for his new book on pop culture. That's at newsheldonbook.com.
That's right. That is newsheldonbook.com. And in case you were looking for a pen in the meantime while I was saying that, that's newsheldonbook.com. And of course, the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode, as all episodes, was edited by the fantastic Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. Comic. I almost made it, man. I almost made it. Patreon.com/comiclab. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. That's just because I don't know the words to Kumbaya.
And then I just come in at the end of that, like as you're singing softly, I just go, hey, bear,